from the fifth quarter.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Border Studios in Madison, Wisconsin. You're listening to Coach Unplugged. And now, your host, Steve Collins.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Coach Unplugged. Today, before we jump in, we'd love to, if you'd leave a review on iTunes and or wherever you listen to podcasts, those five stars do really help. We'd also like to give a big shout out to our sponsors. First of all, Dr. Dish, the number one shooting machine on the market. I'll get it out. Not only are they innovative, unbelievable how shooting machines have changed. You know, I remember when they used to have those long metal racks coming from the court. But how they've innovated, how they've put the trainers right in front of you, it's unbelievable. So go over and check it out. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. It's the one-stop shop for basketball coaches. There's nothing else on the market like it. Nowhere else are you going to get the bat phone to the person running it. No, you know, yes, they might do quarterly or monthly or weekly calls, but they're not on your beck and call. If you have a question, if you have an email, trust me, I will get back to you. I will respond. I will get on a call with you that day. So come over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. Let's head off to the podcast.
I've been fortunate that a lot of my friends in coaching have been willing to come and speak at the clinic on you know, our program's behalf, I guess you could say. And
right.
My first year, I think I had TJ Tibbs was the assistant coach at Baruch College at the time. I had Todd Jamison was one of the best high school coaches in New York City at Nazareth High School. Nolan Adams was the head coach at BMCC, you know, Manhattan Community College, coming off a league championship.
People want help, though. I have found that. I mean, people want to help other coaches. It's like we're all working together.
And I did it as much as I do it as a fundraiser for our program, and that's, I guess, contributed to, you know, these are, you know, you saw our initial jerseys,
right.
Showed you before. These were the newer jerseys I got the following year, and these are sublimated, and then you see the nice logo right there on the shorts, and it's
right.
Also on the stand, and so, like, I guess that kind of contributed, but I also did it because there's not a lot, you said before, there's not more of that in New York City, and there probably should be, and I think that contributes to why New York City basketball is not as good.
And why do you think that is? Is it gym space? Is it gym space? Like, people can't find spots to do it?
To run a clinic?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if people don't want to organize it or don't see the video of it. You'll find a lot of coaches, and I'm sure this could be said of Wisconsin or any other state. They think that they know a lot more about basketball than they do. I think that's because, like, they've won bad, you know, big thing right. in New York City. They're hood tournaments. You play in the hood and the refs aren't real and
right.
the basketball is atrocious. They're just hood tournaments. And, you know, I played in them growing up, and that definitely fostered my competitiveness and definitely helped me get ready to play high school and college basketball because, like, you know, it forced me to play a different style or get used to playing against a different style, things like that. But, like, there's no, not necessarily a translation.
And there's no translation to the college game. Like,
right. But yeah, even in high school, I've had, you know, my sister, I have a younger sister who comes to my games a lot because she's a lawyer right around the corner. And, you know, she was at a game and one time, like, someone involved with one of my players, like his summer coach was like bad mouthing me or something like that. And
right.
I don't care. Like, yeah. What does he know about basketball? I know.
My wife heard that at one of our games. Is like one of the, it's like, why do you listen to that? I don't listen to it. Like,
it doesn't bother me at all.
It doesn't bother me at all.
That kind of stuff will come up often. And I think because of that, like, coaches aren't willing to educate themselves. And so that was a cool thing that I think happened through my clinic, is that, like, you know, my first year, I did a lot of the legwork by myself, you know, in terms of marketing it in and,
right.
And emailing, blast emailing people and getting ignored and all that. I felt like a Jehovah's Witness, and the doors slammed in my face a lot.
Right.
I had coaches email me back with, like, the most, like, disrespectful. If you don't want to come, just don't answer the email. Like, don't say, like, oh, I've been coaching this amount of years and here's what I've done. Like, I got a couple emails like that. I looked up the guy's record. He was like 60 games under 500. Like, maybe you should come to the clinic.
Right.
but one of the first year, one of the TJ Tibbs, really good friend of mine. He's the head coach at College of Staten Island. They just transitioned to Division II from the CUNY Act, the same league I played. We played against each other in college and coached against each other. He did a footwork drill he got from John Boeheline. He calls it under the rope. I'm sure you guys have seen it before. Yeah. Basically, four lines, everyone drive together, land simultaneous,
yep.
Work on jump stopping and 2 foot landing and pivoting and things like that. And my first year, like, you know, I knew how to do that stuff, but I never really thought about teaching that kind of things. You know what I mean?
Right.
I guess in my head, they had more important things they needed to learn.
Yeah.
And I saw TJ do it October going into my second year. And I saw that. And often at my clinic, I don't get a chance to watch it.
Right. Because you're running around like a chicken.
Right. I'm running around. I'm doing registration. I'm making sure the camera's set up, whatever it is. But for whatever reason, I got like a 3-minute window where I was sitting there talking to our coach and watching. It was like, we need to do this.
Right.
We went to do that every day. That's how we started practice, every day.
That's what I tell coaches that go to those clinics too. I mean, I'm going to go to the clinic and I'm going to walk out of there with 3 or 4 things. I'm not going to walk out of there with 50 things, but I'm going to walk out with like that or something else. And that's why I'm going.
So there's the one clip I guess would be the best one I can show.
But that's what I mean. Yeah. I'm going to come when this whole thing dies down. I'll come. I can stay at my brother's place. I'll come. I don't know how long it'll take me to get from where his place is to yours, but
I'll send you. I usually, you know, I'm so thankful of people
it'd be fun.
Speaking at the clinic and stuff like that. I really try to tell them, like, listen, like, there's a really good pizzeria around the corner. I got you. Like, I'll get you some food.
I'm telling you, my brother's a foodie too. He lives in New Hampshire. He's got a place in New York. He's a foodie. There's so much good food in New York. It's crazy.
So you can see this?
Yeah.
All right. So this is the same gym we saw before. So one thing about this gym is, like, this is the charter school that there's actually really want to blow your minds. There's two of this exact gym in the same building. It's a charter school in the Crown Heights section of Brooklyn. And one side of the
building. Where do they get the size to do this thing?
I think it used to be like a warehouse.
Okay.
Something like that. The building is gorgeous. Like, not just their gym, but this is achievement first. So they're on the fourth floor, and there's an identical gym on the second floor. So this is actually where the New York City holds their PSAL holds the A and B quarterfinals and semifinals, because they just put the A division in one gym and the B division in another, and you can go to games all day. It's like a college recruiter's dream, to be honest.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
You're seeing 8 games in.
I mean, this looks like a gym you'd see in the Midwest. Most gyms in the Midwest would probably, if they were this big, would probably have seating on the baseline.
It's enormous. But it's the entire floor. They have a nice weight section over there, and I'm extremely jealous. And I'll show you a couple of our gym. We have a nice gym. I'm not complaining at all.
Yeah, your gym's nice. I like your gym. Your gym's got a little character to it. This looks like just a box, yeah.
This is like a quintessential possession of, like, this is actually the year after we went to the Final Four. But, you know, when I spoke earlier about the splitting the gyms, right? Splitting the team into two sides of the gym. You know, this young man over here was a senior at this point. His sophomore year was the first year in the program. He never played. Right. He was definitely on the 11 through 20 yeah. side of the gym. And then his junior year, he was probably like, he could have been 11, he could have been 9, he could have been 13, depending on how he was doing.
Right.
But senior year, he started every game.
Right.
And there's absolutely no way he would have started every game as a senior if he wasn't with us as a sophomore and a junior. There's
right, because he needed to learn, yeah.
Right, and he's, I mean, even here, he's 5'8", 126 pounds.
Right.
But he shot the crap out of the ball. But this is a really good possession that just kind of spoke to, like, you know, we're kind of an uncommon New York City PSEL team in terms of, like, we get the guys to believe, we move the ball.
Do you see a lot of zone?
Oh, and tons of zone. And, like, you see the two-foot jump stops, the patience, you know, like, that kind of stuff. You seem to get really excited.
Why do you think you see a lot of zone?
Because nobody wants to teach man-to-man. Either they don't know how to.
That was a leading question. If I was a lawyer, that was a leading question.
Yeah, but I was ready for it. I jumped all over it.
I'm going, it's because it takes time to teach man. Like, I can throw anybody into it, 2-3.
And then, you know, this kind of circles back to, I wanted to show, if anyone who watches or listens to this, I want them to at least be able to steal a couple, you know, plays. And, you know, you can just send me a message and say that it worked. So we run a lot of our stuff out of this side box, our baseline out of bounds.
Yep.
And I'm big on, like, I like things that look different. Like, you don't see it often. You might not know how to guard it. Don't know what we're doing. You know, this year we had still only put in, my first year when we went to the Final Four, we only really had this play out of the side box. And then we put a couple in it. By this past season, I think we had like 4 or 5 out of the same alignment so that you couldn't sit on that one play. But this is a really quick out of bounds play. And it works all the time. That him getting the ball there, and I saved 2 different clips, doesn't happen often.
Usually get higher. The screener in the middle, I like that.
But they're not. It's not a screen. It's an exchange.
Okay.
But this is where we usually get it. This is the Final Four year, our first Final Four year. And I would say that we probably scored on this play maybe like 40 to 50 points throughout the season.
They almost look like they're in man-to-man here.
Exchange, layup. And we get that all the time. And then I could pull that up on Fast Draw if you wanted to see it. Or
yeah, you send me that on Fast Draw. I'll have you send that to me on Fast Draw. I'll put it in the show notes for the people.
This is the same game, different play. Same alignment, and I guess I screen recorded at the wrong time. But they start in that same side, and then we get that pop out a lot.
And you get the 3.
Yeah, and then we get this a lot too.
That's the problem with the zone too, because they're not handing anybody off. They're just standing in their spots.
Yeah, and then, you know, this is another one. Like I said, if I had thought about it more. And one thing I try to do, the one play is called Georgetown, because the day we put it in, my assistant coach was wearing Georgetown shorts, and that's what we came up with. We needed a college. But the other one is St. Joe's. One of my best friends coaches at St. Joseph's College in Brooklyn, and one of my other best friends coaches at York. And, you know, we named it over there too.
What? So let's go on to some questions I have. So how would you describe your coaching philosophy?
I feel like it all stems from, you know, I've been around basketball since I was young. I was, you know, second, third grade. And I just want them to know that, you know, that it's about more than basketball, which is the most important thing. And it's easy to say, harder to prove. I think you'll find a lot that a lot of people in New York City, they don't, or in general, there are a lot of coaches who want to use kids to win basketball games, and they don't care about the person behind it, and or how they're doing in school, or what they want to do, and what's going on in their life. And, you know, I think that can be seen. A lot of kids from, at least in our area, they don't qualify coming out to you know, accept a scholarship or even go to good schools.
Right.
So it's about more than basketball. The one thing that we did, each year I tried to have a theme. I don't think we had it. We didn't really develop until like towards the playoffs of my first year. Like, we need to, like, I forget how it came up, man. I'm sure I had 3 senior girl managers, or they were juniors the first year, but I had the same managers for 2 years in a row. Then they were like our team mothers for me, for me included. And they would probably remember the exact story. But something happened and the kid was like, I'm trying. I was like, it's not good enough. Like, I need you to give everything. And, you know, and that just clicked and that just became what we said in huddles. And we had it on a shirt at the end of the year, and going into the second year, that was like the theme. Don't really remember what it was. And this year was like, we had to be different. You know, we had going into last year, going into this year, we had one of the best guards in the city. He was in that clip with the small court. He averaged 27 points a game. Probably, you know, he led us in every category.
Where's he going?
He's at he played his first year at Hudson Valley Community College.
Okay.
He was actually that first college player. We had a couple of kids who were on the Final 14 my second year that could have played in college, and one of them I think got hurt right before tryout, so he was supposed to be a preferred walk-on at St. John Fisher, and another one just decided not to try out. It wasn't for him.
Right.
They didn't go to the schools that I wanted them to go to. Like, the best situation for them, basketball and school-wise. You know what I mean? They're all doing well, which is what's most important to me.
Yeah. Sometimes schools speak to you, yeah.
The opportunity to get out of the city draws a lot of kids in. And SLJ does such a good job at getting kids to teaching them how to advocate for themselves and their college readiness. Like, a kid that's going to St. John Fisher is going for free. St. John
right.
Fisher, like,
right.
$70,000 a year.
Well, that's what people don't understand with the schools. My son's going to Middlebury. It's cheaper than going to the school that's 5 miles away. And then the school's like $80,000. I mean, there's schools out there that have a lot of money. Trust me.
Yeah. So Isaiah, he went to Hudson Valley Community College, and he had an opportunity to go to a couple of different schools. He had some personal issues at the end of junior year. His grades didn't finish up the way he should have. He had a really good year as a freshman. He started every game in college, and that was most proud of, like, something that I think speaks to, like, at least the quality of our program. Like, you know, he's not a scholarship player, maybe a Division II kid in a couple of years, but probably going to have a good Division III career. But, like, he was ready to play college basketball from the day he got there.
Right. And that's the kicker.
Like, right.
People irritate me when they talk. Division III basketball is good basketball.
Oh, especially out where you guys are. You guys in Wisconsin, the D3 teams can be D1 teams.
Well, they're we don't have any. We have one D2 program, so basically our D3s are like D2s. They're so good. They're so good.
Yeah, it's incredible. I've seen tape, but
yeah. Well, look at Dick Bennett and Bo Ryan both started at D3 coaches in our state, and then coaching Wisconsin. Yeah.
And then, you know, the player I'm referring to, his name is Isaiah. He texted me in the beginning of his like second week of preseason. He's like, thank you for being so hard on me. Like, I understand why now.
Right.
He's like, because, like, I have kids on this team that they don't get it.
Yeah.
And where they're coming from, who coached them.
No one did. So what do you think is the easiest part of and the hardest part about coaching in New York?
Easiest
what's the easiest
part?
Thing and what's the hardest thing?
Can it be the same answer?
Sure. I mean, I guess. I've never had anybody answer it that way.
The easiest thing is everybody wants to play basketball. And the hardest thing is everybody thinks they can play basketball.
They think they can play basketball. That's the difference.
I think it's just there's so many people in the city and so many schools, and it's oversaturated. And the easiest thing is, like, it's like I said, generally people, you know, they want to play, and that is, but at the same time, it's the hard thing is getting them to understand, at least where I'm at. But you can say this about the teams that win the highest division in the city basketball every year. Like, they don't know what they don't know, and, you know, they think that they're ready and they're not. And that's why often the kids that have come out of the city, and generally speaking, over the last, let's say, since I left college, the last 8 years, haven't done extremely well in college right away, because they might not have been prepared to play college basketball from a IQ standpoint, a physical standpoint, just a maturity standpoint.
Yeah, it surprises me there haven't been more guys from New York City. Like,
yeah, I mean, but a lot of the best players from the New York City, New Jersey area, they leave. They go to these schools somewhere else. And
yeah, they go to the prep schools, and then they're not.
Yeah,
New York City kids. Yeah.
Obi Toppin is a New York City kid. I didn't even know that.
Right.
I didn't know that at all, because he's been gone so long. You know
yeah. Yeah, I never thought about that. That makes a lot more sense. Hey, is there one coaching moment, a good one or a bad one, that would that we could dive into that might help our listeners?
It
can be good, it can be bad, doesn't matter. Like a teachable moment is what I refer to it as.
Well, the best, I mean, I find that the best things that...
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Have happened that I've experienced as a, especially as a head coach, was that the moments that like show you why you're doing it. And I remember my freshman year.
I think one of them you already explained with the cups. That's one. That's a moment.
Oh, yeah. But this one, after my first year, it was actually like 2 days after we lost in that tough playoff game up in the Bronx. And the kid who was a senior that year, and it was the first year I met him. He had been on the team for 2 years. He failed off both years, his sophomore and his junior year. And that was one thing I was super, like, you're students first. And again, that's one of those things, easier to say, harder to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, we come in, we have study hall every day. And like, I tell them all the time, like, I'm passionate about it and I love you guys. At the same time, like, I'm about business. So they would come in and they would put their first thing they did at study hall was they take their phone and they put it on my desk, and they take a laptop or they take their work. They get right to work. Like, you're here to do work before practice. Like, I don't have to be here till 5:30. I don't get paid for study hall time. I'm just there. I was there for them.
Right.
And then I worked really hard with this one kid who probably didn't get the support he needed when he was initially starting out as a student in middle school and never learned how to study and things like that. And, after we lost in the playoffs that year, he sent me a 3-page long text. And this is the original iPhones when the letters were too big and the text went on forever. He talked about how this is the best year of his life, and it had everything to do with basketball and nothing to do with basketball at the same time. That he never had somebody that cared about him like I did and held him accountable. He apologized because we always talk about, like, I'm big on naming things. We call our the basket, we call it mama. Like,
right.
we want to protect mama, that kind of thing. I've heard the basket called the White House and whatever it is, but we always call the mama. He's like, you know, he ended up giving up the layup on the sideline out of bounds play that lost the game. He's like, you know, you told me all year about protect the mama and I didn't do it and I'm sorry, but this is the best year of my life because I didn't fail off. I was there every day. My mom cried. She never thought I was going to get accepted to college. And, you know, that kind of thing spoke to me.
Right. Those are the moments. All right. So I'm going to go through.
One more, though.
Okay.
A warning. I think that as a young coach, one of my issues, I was immature as a college coach to a certain extent. I came into a situation where, like, I played right away. I played and then I coached right away. And, you know, I'm not sure how it is in Wisconsin. A lot of the coaching positions here, even college, are part-time. So my college coach was at that time was a middle school history teacher. And he was doing that for 20 years, teaching middle school history and coaching college basketball.
Really?
Yeah.
No, it's a full-time gig here, man. If you're a college coach, you might do a little class at the college, but you're a
right college. Here, some of the coaches in the CUNYAC throughout my time have been like assistant athletic director or
right.
mission, something like that. They had a secondary title, but the athletics was their secondary title, basically. So, you know, for whatever reason, my college coach, like, he started going through some things. He wasn't around as much, and he's one of my mentors. I talk to him every day. I love him. He taught me a lot about life and basketball, but he had, you know, things going on, and the other assistant coaches weren't around as much as, you know, as I was, because I was young. I didn't have as many responsibilities, and, you know, it became like a power struggle between me and one of the assistant coaches who was my assistant coach when I played. And I became very like, well, I did this and, you know, not bragging, but like defending myself. Like, these are my recruits or whatever the case was.
Right.
I think that I wasn't prepared for that. I didn't know what I didn't know.
Right.
And, you know, and I think I wore a big chip on my shoulder when I didn't get the coaching job after my coach stepped down and, you know, like, I'll show you kind of thing. I'm ready. And I wasn't.
You weren't ready. And the first one I didn't get, I thought I was ready too. I just remember how, oh. Yeah,
I think that I would have handled it fine.
But right. Like,
I definitely wasn't.
You'd be better now if you took it now.
Oh, like, yeah. Without a doubt.
Yeah.
But like, I would speak cautiously to young coaches or coaches who are just getting into it about, you know, being where your feet are, and not really feeling the need to defend your every action, just kind of letting your what you're doing talk and kind of be a little bit more humble. And I've never been someone who brags or boasted or anything like that. It's just looking back now, I realized like I could have done a lot. I could have handled myself differently than I did.
Right.
And I think that came from
I think that, I mean, I think that's great. I mean, you basically just, you, the last question of every podcast you just answered. So we won't leave it there, but I always ask, what would you say to your younger self?
Me basically talking to myself.
Yeah, no, but I think that's pertinent. All right. So I'm going to ask you, go through my rapid fire here. What's your favorite brand of basketball? The actual ball you use?
Wilson Evolution. I like, that's the one I shoot best with.
And does the city use that? Or anybody can use anything?
I'm telling you guys outside of New York City are not prepared for the wild, wild west that is New York City basketball. Like, they make their own moves.
It might be an orange, like, outdoor ball.
Yeah, we've played with some bad. And a lot of schools don't provide you with basketballs when you get there. And, yeah, you have to bring your own or you only get one. The last couple of years, you know, I stopped letting the other team warm up with good basketballs. I gave them like the gym class basketballs to warm up with, and I kept our basketballs for ourselves because like other teams were treating us so badly. And then I felt bad and I circled back, but I did that a couple of times.
That's crazy. That's like it is the Wild West.
It's nuts, man. You don't understand.
One word to describe your ideal player.
Tough.
Okay. If you go to one sporting event in the world, what would you go to and why?
World Cup. And just like the passion, I don't think could be.
It's crazy. I mean, when I traveled Europe with my brother and we were in Italy when it was in Italy, and you can't describe it to Americans. It's like the town, it literally, you could have robbed every house at that point. Like,
yeah, I would love, you know, I've always wanted to be in that kind of environment. Like, even like, or being somewhere like Texas with like a Friday night football game or something.
Yeah,
like
high school football in Texas or Indiana like, basketball. Yeah.
I remember one of my uncles lives in basically right outside Orlando, Florida. And I just missed like opening weekend of that high school season 1 year. And I was upset because I know that they get into it, but not like Texas, but like kind of like, you know,
Florida football is a real deal too. It is. What's your favorite pregame meal?
I mean, our games are at 4:30 a lot of times. I'm not even eating between there.
Okay. Post-game meal.
If I could choose one, I'm going to the pizza place around the corner from St. Thomas. Lenny and John's Pizza. Only their slices are good. Their pies aren't very good, but their individual slices are.
And why is that?
I have absolutely no idea. It's just what they're actually known for. It. It's like it was a big, you know, Flappish Avenue is like the long – I think it's the second longest street in Brooklyn. A lot of people don't understand how big Brooklyn is. People that like have never been to New York City. Like, Brooklyn is almost as big as Manhattan. Like, Brooklyn is like 8 miles long.
Okay.
So it's like enormous. And Flappish Avenue goes from all the way in South Brooklyn to the Manhattan Bridge, which is like 5 blocks past the Barclays Center.
Right.
So I grew up right there on Flappish, like in the middle of all that, Flappish Avenue. And it's a big back when they originally opened, there was a big stretch of bars there, and it became like they would stay open to like 4 a.m. and just hand over. They've remodeled their place just based on all the money they made. And I don't know why they're so famous for their individual sizes being way better than their pies. It's just what they do.
Oh, wow. One skill not being taught in today's game.
Footwork.
Okay. One thing you do to relax. It's obviously not running.
For someone who doesn't run, I've run, and I'm really out of shape. I'm like 25 pounds past my playing weight. I ran like an 8:20 mile, which I think is all right.
Well, that's pretty good. That's good.
Someone who doesn't run. Yeah. One thing I do to relax. I started. I wish I had gotten into it earlier. I started listening to podcasts. Like when I was at the elliptical at the gym or something like that. Like big thing we didn't really touch on. Like I think what really helped was kind of finding what I liked in other people's practices and making it my own and also taking it from it. Like I like basketball immersion. I don't know if you're familiar with Chris Oliver and how he teaches, and we did a lot of that stuff. Actually, if I could share one more thing, I kind of incorporated something that we did in practice for decision making, I think is pretty cool. But listen to podcasts, video games, walk my dog. I have a 6-year-old cycle of a dog that's somewhere around here. Just basic. I've always been, like I said before, I don't really know what it's like to not have a basketball season. So it's kind of always been like the driving force.
Hopefully you have one next year. What's one coaching technique you consider important?
Not over coaching, I guess would be, I don't know what that technique would be.
I think that's good.
I tried to do too much when I was, you know what I mean? Like now it's way easier to kind of like stay in the same.
I think moderation's the key. I think what Oliver does is great with basketball immersion, but you can't do game-based practices the whole time.
But I also can really see why it helped. I also think that I don't think people play enough in practice, if that makes
sense. Well, I mean, I've always done that. I've always had enough playing. I've always had enough 5-on-5 and skill. I mean, the problem is you need a moderation because, especially with your guys, I gotta at some point leave that, and I gotta teach them the footwork. I have to teach them because they don't have the skill set. It's like I'm not gonna teach them calculus if they don't know algebra.
Yeah, and we didn't. I think that when I circle back to what TJ did with the footwork drill at the clinic, like. Something so simple. No one different was on that team. We didn't get that much better. Like kids got older, but we didn't get that much better. It was just like we got better at the little things that people don't value, like stopping.
One word to describe your coaching style.
Intense.
Okay. One book you'd recommend.
Ooh, basketball related or otherwise?
One book.
The Lone Survivor was a really good book. I like that.
I like that one. That's a great book.
It's way better than the movie. And I like the, if I was going to go sports related, I like the Stuart Scott book too.
Yeah, I listened to Lone Survivor on Audible. It was great. Any parting words, Coach? Because you took my last question. My last question is, what would you always say to your younger self? You kind of answered that already. Any parting words for the listeners? I'll put all this stuff in the show notes and the stuff he was talking about.
If anybody wanted to reach out to me, my Instagram is at Coach B. Shea, and we can take all that stuff. Parting words is just like, be intentional about what you're doing. I always talked about, tell the guys that in whatever you're doing, be intentional. Like, don't just do it for the sake of doing it. Like, know why you're doing it or find your why in doing it. That was big. Like, and I think that was something that when I got into a rant with the player from before, like we had lost, no one expected us to have a good season this year because we had lost such an important part of our team from last year. And, and we had a couple of new kids just happen to come into the school. But I think the most part is that we grew and we were intentional about how we got there every day in practice. And we struggled early on. We lost some games we should have won. And then, the coronavirus killed the city championship run.
But it's the process. So that's what I would say to the younger coaches too. It's literally about the process.
Yeah. My college coach always told us when you're a pressing team, you can't get upset when you give up a layup.
Right.
It's going to happen. Like, just know how you're going to get, know what you're striving for in your end game before like you give up on something.
And know how you're going to change it in the future. Thanks, Coach. I appreciate it.
All right, man. Have a good night.
Hey, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you like it. Go over and check out our other podcasts, High School Hoops, Teacher Side Gig. And then go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. Have a great day.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.